Welcome to A Course in Miracles.
Thank you.
So, the general topic we're working on for these next couple of weeks, and as we have in the last couple of weeks, is in this beautiful section called The Vision of Sinlessness. What we're working on tonight is going to tie those two things together, vision and sinlessness. Why is it so important that you are able, probably in your mind first, but others of you, it'll be the opposite. Mind, then heart. Others of you, it will be heart and then mind. But they must both come together when I say the word sinlessness. And, of course, what we're going to do is have the Holy Spirit translate for you a difficulty that you may be having with either yourself or the world or somebody else in the world. If there's any hatred in your heart at all, if there's any judgment that you think is warranted against another, this is the way that you are locking your existence into a body. It says this 500 times throughout this book, in one way or the other. Trying to get you to experience that it is your thoughts that make the prison bars that surround you and keep you in the experience of a body. It knows, the author knows, that because you actually are love, you share the same source as Jesus. He knows that your heart will not be satisfied, and neither will his, because it's one heart, until you return to love. This world is a place where you can escape from love. It's been a blast. But somebody stop the ride. I want to get off. So A Course in Miracles is that. It's the way for you, essentially, to kill off your separate identity before your body dies. This would be most helpful because the whole idea of birth and death being life, the story of a body, right? That whole idea is an addiction that says this is your existence. Birth, death. So naturally, if your body were to quit, you'd say, what happened? Where's my... Oh, there's another one. I'll just take that. It actually happens all the time, even in your same body. You choose to reinvest in this identity who you think you are. One of the ways you reinvest is you prove your separation. You prove it. You prove your separation when you judge another person as being, let's just use a strong enough word so you get what we're really talking about. When you judge another person as being evil, evil, harmful, bad, that's what they are. And that evil could harm you. When you get into that type of thinking, you are making your own hell, and you are keeping the world as a place, a real place, cementing your separation, keeping you asleep in the nightmare. So we're going to trap these thoughts. We're going to work tonight on trapping these habitual judgments that occur and seem so real, so valid, so needed, so sane in the world, to judge the bad people and praise the good people, and that'll keep you safe and sane and, you know, all that works in the world just fine. But it also makes the world. And it makes you stay in the world. Because now you have a place. You hold up the good and defend against the bad. That cycle will continue and continue and continue. Because you wrote that script and you'll play it out until you decide not to. That's why suicide does not work. Killing off the body. The body's neutral. A young one, old one, it's neutral. Your thoughts, on the other hand, about being in a body, this is what we must work with. Tonight we're going to work on one aspect of the addiction, being in bodies, and it's the idea of judgment. It's the idea of sin or evil that you might assign to another, or even to yourself, to something you've said or you've done or you've thought or you thought about. All the same, see? Let's catch it. Let's catch the ego at this little maneuver, and you'll see how, by seeing through this block that they are bad, they deserve to die, they shouldn't be alive, they are harming innocent others. That's what I'm talking about. Them. By seeing through that, this is the use of vision. You must gain this vision. Not of innocence. We do that also with Course in Miracles. It's another level of work where we just find innocence, right? Acknowledge innocence. This is another discussion. This is another higher level of looking at this thought pattern. It's called sinlessness. That sin isn't possible. You would need a miracle for that, folks. That's why the word vision is vision of sinlessness. You would need a miracle, because you're switching levels of perception. Watch my words right there very carefully. To do what we're doing tonight, we will be taking a journey. We'll be switching levels of perception from wrong perception to right perception. You would need a miracle for that, and what we're doing is loaded with them. So let's take a few moments before we get started, and let's kind of wrap our heads around this idea of judgment. It's a concept I think everybody here is familiar with. We'll see if we can trap it and corner it a little bit. The reason why we're doing this is to surface it so there's no doubt what it is the ego is using to block you, to block your love, to block your awakening. This judgment thing keeps you asleep, keeps you in prison, keeps you defending a separate identity. Let's bust it. All right. Is there a critical voice in you? When something goes wrong? Is there a critical voice in you that not only is curious about analyzing what went wrong, but wants to assign blame out there to somebody else or some situation? Is that in you? Don't hide from it now. This is a good place, so let's just bring it forward. It's kind of a habit. You've learned it's a bad habit, I'm sure, by now. But it's innocent all the same. It's part of your script, living in a body, to be judgmental, to assign guilt at a level of malice. Is that in you? You know, we talk about love and peace and forgiveness and salvation and saving the world. We talk about all these things in Course in Miracles too. But you know, most of the book is really about your stinking thinking. What it is you have to learn to stop doing. So let's look at this one now. Open-minded now. Let it flow. Become aware of the part of your mind that is so quickly critical, assigns blame. And isn't there something even more sinister behind that? Please, take a look. What is this desire that is beyond just your discernment of right and wrong action? What is it that goes beyond calling it a mistake? Oh no. This wasn't a mistake. He did this on purpose. This is how this person is, don't you see? Maybe you like to swear when you describe how they behave because it scratches this itch I'm trying to get you to look at. Go there now. Surface this ego maneuver. What is behind, underneath, this assigning of blame? What do you think your mind is trying to accomplish by casting this shadow on your brother? Sometimes it seems to take days, weeks, till you really get it right and you figured out what makes them so bad. You scratch that itch. The ego's trying to get you to assign this judgment. What is he trying to accomplish by judging another so deeply and so surely? When you feel you've been wronged, what are you trying to accomplish? Has it ever felt good in some way? Settling even, satisfying even, to finally figure out what it is that bothered you so much about what they did. Somehow were you rewarded by having this fitting judgment of this bad thing that happened to you or what they did? And now finally, for this last minute or two, drill down. See if you can surface. What do you think your ego, your mind, is trying to accomplish by judging another person who's done something wrong around you that you know of? Just take a stab at it. See what your Holy Spirit will give you to share with the group? What is it your ego's trying to accomplish by finding the perfect judgment of this evil deed? I promise we'll get to some nice, pretty things to think about. But you know what? We gotta bust the ego. This is how you walk out of the darkness, as you actually recognize you're in it. Sundari, would you unmute yourself? And if you care to, share with us what you think your ego is trying to accomplish when it judges so deeply.
Who? Well...
Me? Who, me?
Is that what I said, Andrew?
No, I know.
Okay. Oh, my boy. This is very intense for me. I've been in a situation since before COVID till now of threats and lawsuits and between the neighbors and myself. And at the moment, this week I was supposed to make a final payment on this new driveway and just said, I won't unless I know. They'd hidden the fact they were building a structure, a new structure that might threaten the integrity of the driveway, and took away part of it and made all these decisions without me, this curve that helped going into it. So I've said, in order to receive further payment, you need to put the curve back in and just let me know through some structural engineer or something that there'll be integrity and we won't get a sinkhole like there was down the street. So when I went into it deeply, everything that's happened since before COVID till now has been, I don't matter. And it's been my ego's feeling discounted, ignored. I want to take this stand to say that I exist. And when I looked at it even more deeply, I remember being like 3 years old in the back of a car listening to a scary radio show about a scientist taking a potion and getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until he wasn't even there. And there's a way that I feel like if I don't have the reflection that I exist, that I don't. And there feels like a real panic place in me. There feels like a place of terror and panic of, if enough people ignore me, that I'm just going to disappear and be nowhere. And I mean, I can actually feel like the terror of it. Just, and it's like, no, I matter. Hey, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. It's deep.
Yeah, it's deep. That's where we have to go with this exercise.
Feeling like I would vanish without the reflection that I'm here and that I have significance in creation.
And you have a say, you have an opinion, and it shall be heard.
You know, even it's not like I won't give them the money.
Right.
Like every decision has been hidden and the two of them make it. And then sending emails and have turned the third neighbor against me.
Are you trying to say you're not a doormat?
I don't know if it's really a doormat. It feels like you know, you wouldn't ever, nobody would probably ever think I'm a doormat, but I probably try to, I try hard to get along, and this has been, these are my saviors. I mean, this is like so intense to have, and the pattern of expecting people to turn against me. There's an expectation from
there we go.
Of people who I've gotten along with and are going to turn against me. And just over the last few weeks, I've realized it pervades every aspect of my life, every aspect of my life. That expectation.
Yes. Yes. And they deserve to be judged for it?
You know, I don't feel that part of it at this point. You know, I mean, my ego could get into that easy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've done a lot of forgiveness work along the way here. And it's you know, and I ignored them for a while. I mean, I can see.
My question is, does, for one of them, ever do something wrong?
Yeah. I've made 3 police reports.
And you've made 3 police reports to make sure that it was thoroughly explored and labeled correctly how wrong it was.
Yeah.
That's what I'm after. Assigning guilt and what's behind. Now, that's, listen, people do things illegal, and there's a level of discernment that you place blame for, and it's analytical and it's proper. You judge your part, they judge their part. You divide the thing by 60% because that's how much it was their problem, and you pay and it's over. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this itch that's behind, goes beyond the blame, that's satisfied when you finally nail them on what they did wrong and how evil it was. This is the ones I'm concerned about, not the ones about just civil measurement of right and wrong in the world. That's not what I'm after. I'm after the more burdensome ones, the ones that you think about and you wake up in the morning 3-4 years later and still stuck in your heart because you put more on it than just a simple decision. You actually put some blame there, some darkness there. This is what holds the world together. This is what, but I love what you said, though, because you really, when you talked about your identity here and that you need, you kind of think it's important to your existence that you be heard. I think that's a really good piece of it. Luann, tell us something about this.
The only thing that came up for me when I was doing this was a story. And the story feels true and it feels false at the same time. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's not quite it, but it feels like it's as close as I'm going to get right now. And the story is what I hate the fact that I judge. I know I judge all the time. I catch myself judging throughout the day constantly. And I get mad at myself. And so, in the process that you had us go through, what I came up with is when you said the ego wants us to judge, I put down it wants us to separate so we can't be one. And so I wrote, this is it. I hope hope the story comes through. Wanted to start off by saying what I really want is I want individuality. And I want to be perfect in that individuality. And that's behind my judging because everybody else is keeping me from being perfect. For instance, if I didn't have that to judge about, I would be perfect because I don't want to judge. Time. So what came through for that was how can I know what I truly am as a child of God when I think of others as separate? By not seeing their truth self as love as I am. What I know from reading the book, and it feels true, is that their shining verifies my own. But I can't get close to that, which is why I think the ego does this. I can't get close to it because I'm judging them all.
You're kind of taking the shine off when you judge them as evil. Very good. Oh, that's great, Luann. You're reaching for perfection. And they're in the way. I think that's
okay. It's their fault that I'm judging them. They'd just be perfect too. I wouldn't have to do that.
It's their fault. I love it. That's perfect. Excellent. Ross, what is your mind trying to accomplish when it does these real deep dives into judgment? What's going on there?
Well, the stock answer is it's projecting guilt onto someone else so I don't have to feel it. But what just came up for me is it gives me the right to be upset.
Oh,
so the latest example that I caught, I was happy because I caught this. I told my son a week ago about plans for the weekend. And so I called him up and I was like, wait a minute, I'm getting ready to be upset. Wow. If he doesn't remember that I told him about the plans for the weekend. And I was like, hey now, let me catch that before it even blossoms. And
wow.
So I made the phone call and I'm like, I'm on guard, ego. You're not going to get me. But that's the subtlety of it for me anyway, is that I'll decide in advance, well, if this happens, and I know it might, then I'm going to be justifiably upset.
Wow.
And I can judge them big time, because I knew they were going to do that bad thing.
And I'll be right. I can get as angry as I want.
Right?
So the more angry I get, the bigger apology will come back, and that'll just, you know, somebody will learn something. Wow, that's great.
It's like that subtle, it's that subtle setup, and then you're upset, and you have to almost go back and go, why am I upset? And you go, oh, wait a minute, I set this up.
Oh, man, Ross, that is right on it. The slippery slope of not being vigilant and letting there be a justified attack.
Yep.
Oh, my God. I just want you to read one sentence on page 494. Everybody hold your... Oh, you don't have your book open yet. Go to page 494. This is for Ross because he's right on top of it here. Woo! Go to page 494, paragraph 22, where Jesus has just finished his counseling you on these laws of chaos and how you make your of your own life a living hell. He's kind of running you through this, how you use your mind in a perverse way, using your freedom to just make your life miserable. He does. But he closes it up very nicely here on paragraph 22. And Sundari, would you read that to Ross? Paragraph 22. Listen to Jesus counseling you, catching yourself before you make you slip this slippery slope into darkness.
Brother, take not one step in the descent to hell. For having taken one, you will not recognize the rest for what they are, and they will follow. Attack in any form has placed your foot upon this twisted stairway that leads from heaven.
Can you imagine with a teenager, you bring up all sorts of other stuff you never really finished talking about once you got on a roll. How he forgot something else. Not just this. You know what? You also forgot. You could really make a big mess of it if you start this descent, especially as the loving father that you are with all this history with this kid. Oh, God, the ego can mess up anything beautiful. Please continue.
Yet, any instant, it is possible to have all this undone. How can you know whether you choose the stairs to heaven or the way to hell? Quite easily. How do you feel? Is peace your awareness? In your awareness? Are you certain which way you go? And are you sure the goal of heaven can be reached? If not, you walk alone. Ask then your friend to join with you and give you certainty of where you go.
That's kind of what you did when you said, wait a minute, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to prepare for an attack. Somewhere this reminder in you of lightness returned.
Yeah, but the trick is seeing it early, because it's like there's this subtle little, almost unconscious decision that I'm going to be mad if... And I'm going to be right to judge.
Yeah.
So it's this whole setup thing that you have to, that I, for me, I have to catch it before it happens. Or I can go down the path and then go, wait a minute, all right, let's replay that scene, because that didn't feel peaceful.
That's why I thought it might be helpful during the meditation to take a look at how there's some satisfaction being sought. Something that feels good about being so right.
Because you can tell the story about how he, you know, oh, you can go to all your friends and say, hey, look, you know, I told him a week ago and he forgot. Ah, he's such a dumb kid. Boy, oh boy. You know, and all your friends will nod their heads and say,
you're
oh,
so
yeah,
right exactly about him being so wrong.
Yeah, I know. So there's the satisfaction.
Bust that.
Exactly.
That's a shallow, shallow victory, as you know, of course. But you know what? It's a pattern we all have, and it's built in, this guilty pleasure. Good thing to catch. It'll lose its attraction as you look at how twisted it is. It's the opposite of what you want.
Yeah, one of my Adyashante used to say, once you see it, it takes all the power out of it.
And that's yes, indeed.
True. So once you see that process, you can go, oh, no. I've seen this one before. So the power is gone.
You rise above it. When you actually look at it without being in it, you rise above it. And this way you leave the sickness that created it for even an instant is all it takes. That's what he's talking about. It's in A Course in Miracles too. Sundar, you have something you say?
Yeah, I love asking the question, is the one in front of me the problem or the solution? Mm. And particularly when I catch it in a phone call, you know, I've been charged wrong on a bill and I'm making the call. Is the person I'm going to talk to
the
solution or my problem?
I love it. That's great.
A lot of times I've been able to switch mid-process in the middle of a phone conversation with someone, realizing what I was doing, and everything shifts in what happens in the whole interaction, even though I'm smack dab in the middle of it.
Great, Sundari. You should write a book about that. Jacqueline, can you tell us something about what is your mind trying to accomplish when it tries to make somebody so perfectly guilty?
Well, I had this image when we were going inward, and I just had this image of I turned away. I was with God. I turned away, and then the whole world was before me, and a sense of knowing that my own guilt about separating was the guilt, the blame I was projecting. I was just and everyone out there is me. I mean, that's all me. So it was kind of like my self-hate and my own guilt is where that comes from. And you asked about the reward. You asked to look at the reward. And the reward is that I keep it hidden from myself that I've separated. And that this is, everything about the illusion, all of it, it keeps it in the shadow. It keeps me believing this is true. That appears to be a reward. However, when I actually am in my thoughts, which are only bothering me, I really am overwhelmed with how much my thoughts are bothering me whenever I think these things. That's really been going on for me a lot lately, and I feel a little overwhelmed by it. And even my thoughts about my thoughts bother me. So...
Yes.
Um,
yes.
So the reward is like this cookie that I'm offered by the ego or myself or whatever that created this. It's a poison cookie because I don't ever feel good. Even if I feel righteous, you know, when I felt righteous and I was right, maybe I was even talking like Ross, when I'm talking to somebody about it, I don't feel good inside. If I really stop, feel inside, I don't feel good. So it's a poison cookie.
Yes.
The reward.
Poison cookie.
It's just not, you know, so that's sort of the image.
There is a way out for you. There is a miracle. The miracles are waiting, as you well know.
Yes.
And this is really great because your journey is perhaps much shorter than you think.
Well, I don't have the investment. I mean, even though I'm having the thoughts bother me, I know that I have a knowing they're not real, that this is, you know, this is the journey.
Yes, you do.
There's something else I was going to say, but I can't think of it, but anyway.
And yet it keeps coming back like a habit. That's why you look at, turn to the workbook, and it's just like lesson three. It's lesson three. It's lesson four. It's lesson four in the workbook. It's one of the multiple places where it actually says this, but that's the first one I could think of. These thoughts do not mean anything. He's not denying that you're having these thoughts. However, by the time you come to this part of A Course in Miracles, it's time to look for meaning in the thoughts that are so bothersome.
Mm-hmm.
They don't mean anything. He's giving you the answer right here to work with all day. You catch the thoughts and you recognize that they don't mean anything. They don't carry any message or value. It's a really, really generous, wonderful insight and permission to let go of some of the stinking thinking. Also to recognize that it's normal for being in a body. One more for Jacqueline, one more sentence to read, paragraph really. Turn to workbook page 425 real quick. We'll come right back. You guys haven't opened yet to tonight's reading. So page 425 in the workbook. Look where Jesus is. From his awakened perspective, he's got a gift to give all of us who found ourselves bind up in the way that you beautifully described this ugliness we all have, the echoing in our mind, self-judgments and reminders, and oh my God. Look at paragraph one. And Luann, would you read paragraph one to Jacqueline?
What is the body? The body is a fence. The body is a fence the Son of God imagines he has built to separate parts of his self from other parts. It is within this fence he thinks he lives, to die as it decays and crumbles. For within this fence he thinks that he is safe from love. Identifying with his safety, he regards himself as what his safety is. How else could he be certain he remains within the body, keeping love outside?
Thank you. This is a tip on our addiction, on how this identity with the body represents your separate self, mm-hmm. and all of your thoughts that you're having seem to convince you that you should remain separate, actually. You're not worthy of being, in the current state of mind especially, being love, being with God, returning to spirit. All of us are programmed to see, when we look in the mirror, something that is less than love, or perfect love, or God, spirit. In fact, it's perfectly material and fouled and troubled in some way. This points it out point blank and says that the body is a perfect place for you to hide from love. It's perfect. In its perfect separation, and the brain is the part of your body that continues to do the judgments and continues to remind you about these limited thoughts. It's a great way to keep you in hell. Good, good. Let's bust that. We can bust that. That's exactly what you're doing. You're well on your way, and there's no worries there. You're closing on it.
Can I read what I wrote when I first read this?
Sure.
My body is my perfect space to be alone in my own kingdom. Therefore, I'm separate.
You got it. Andrew Huang, tell us something. You there?
He looks like he left for a bit.
Looks like he left for a bit. Let's do Donna. Donna, can you tell us, what is your mind trying to do when it does these deep dives into judgment? Oh, you're muted, Donna.
Thank you. I've really been in this dilemma, in this, vicious cycle lately. And so, it has different parts. It has the part where I am really connected to everything and I feel that love. And then I kind of notice, wow. Here it is again, the same thing. So there's a person in my life who, from time to time, but not so far between the times, will just kind of turn on me, so to speak, and get really, say something like you statements, like you're this and you're that and you're the other thing. So, I've been thinking, okay, I must need this person in my life because they've done it so many times. So when they do that, and all it might not come out then, but all my judgment, that's one of the things, it doesn't usually come out then. But it will try to, my ego mind, sometimes you said mind, sometimes you said ego, but it seems like this ego mind is trying to reestablish my identity by judging them, that I am not that. In fact, I'm very much different. I'm even better than that other person. And of course, the whole time I'm completely uncomfortable with that because it doesn't work. And then, so I'm making myself separate. And then it's as if I didn't do that, that same ego mind would be separating me from myself because it'd be telling me I'm not worth anything. And so suddenly when everybody was sharing, I had the memory also of my mom, who must have been having a terrible time at the time when I was about probably 9 or 10. But she used to, if I argued with her about anything because I didn't think it was logical, she would usually punish me. And she'd say, you have to go to your room and you can't come out until you come out and tell me you're wrong. So I just then thought, I've known that, but I thought, wow, that ego really liked that trick because I can never get out of it. I'm always wrong. I'm completely wrong. But I'm trying to establish my, the reward is I'm redeeming myself and making myself separate at the same time, which I don't want.
Yeah. And, scratching that itch.
Yes. And so I thought, that is a really big double bind, in myself, but it just seems, and as soon as I get into where I go, I can't believe that I feel so good today. I just feel connected to everything. It seems like it starts creeping back again. And
yeah, oh, I forgot to judge.
Yes, I forgot that. Especially start with myself if there's nobody there to do.
Good, so, good. I'm glad you feel a little chaos around that.
Yeah.
A little consternation, a little bind, you said. It's binding.
Yeah, it's good. Big bind.
Good, good. There's a way out for you. We're working on it. That's good. Andrew, what can you tell us when you indulge yourself and really figure out why somebody is so bad and so wrong? What are you trying to accomplish?
I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of levels to it, a lot of layers to it. The most immediate one is probably what I can think of is to validate how horrible and terrible this yeah. world and this human experience is.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It wants to find a scapegoat. It wants to find someone, yes. you know.
Yes.
But that made me also connect it to it also crying for help, uh-huh. you know. Uh-huh. Also it wanting to go back into the womb.
Nice.
You know, to a safe place. So it's interesting because it's creating separation,
uh-huh.
but also wanting union.
Yeah, that's great. Andrew, you know, you've got both sides of the coin right there. You got the problem yeah. and the solution right in your hands. It's good. Good. You're reading the right book. It's going to, your rewards are beautiful there, but you're going to find them written as well by Jesus to help you see them clearly and to release the ugly part and keep the beautiful part. So welcome to A Course in Miracles. You're right on it. Thank you. Deborah, what can you tell us about when you really go to town and judge somebody? What are you trying to accomplish? Is that a guilty smile?
Before I exist. it seems like I'm trying to define, granted it's the small I, but I'm trying to define myself.
Yes.
The stronger my thoughts, I won't say beliefs because it's thoughts, and the stronger they are, the more I identify myself.
Very good. That's it. You make the frame. You're making the frame jewel by jewel and nail by nail. And innocent Deborah is in the middle and all this hell surrounds. And that's where you would stay. As you know those limits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good, good, good catch. Good catch. Jason, what are you up to when you're doing your judgments that seem so necessary at the time?
I was thinking recently, I was watching my mind persecuting my wicked stepmother. And I even talked to myself about it. That's how sick it gets. But what it proves, really, is that the ego needs to use others to validate its own existence, whereby it creates a smokescreen of who and what I really am. It's like anger. They say anger is really powerful for people because it creates so much energy within the body system, they think they're real.
Yes.
Oh, I have all this energy and I'm really pent up and angry, and I'm therefore, then I'm real like this table.
Makes you feel alive.
You're like the table. This is going to go away. So is the table at some point. Mm-hmm. But we think that if we have this judgment or another story, the anger, that it really validates the ego, making it real for which it is not.
Yes. As if seeing that negative would show you your positive and the difference between you would make your good more real. Interesting. You bet. You bet. That's good. That's good ego math. No doubt. Tim, what can you tell us about this dive into judgment that sometimes you just feels kind of necessary? You got to get it right. And finally, after maybe a few rounds, you figure out why somebody is so guilty and so wrong. What is your mind trying to accomplish when you judge like that? And you're muted. Can you unmute yourself, Tim?
Sorry about that.
Yep.
It's displacement. It's projection instead of extension, which is the true creative mode from God. It's taking my guilt and pushing it out there, making somebody else responsible for the pain that's the result of the decision I made. And then once I made the decision, I squelched even my awareness that I made the decision. I hide that from myself. And so it's a way of keeping the game going in perpetuity. I had a question for you. You said the brain does that. And when you said brain, I heard in my mind, you sort of, I thought you meant the equivalent of the ego making that choice as a decision maker. What is the mind? Where does it reside?
The mind is a term that the Course calls, this is a quote from the Manual for Teachers, it says, the mind is the activating agent of spirit. That's the mind. Talk about that in a minute. The brain is like a book, a notepad. The brain is a repository of thoughts that you decide to commit to your body existence. So the brain is this place where you can have habits, you can have altered experiences with drugs, you can have a practice routine of anger where you will see something you decide is bad and then your body feels bad. Why does it feel bad? Because the brain circuitry sent a signal down into the, get a little cortisol out and dump that in the blood, and that caught a whole sequence of feeling of burning in your belly for a minute. Says, wow, if it's that bad, I must be right. Oh, this is bad. And the brain is this participant in order to have thoughts that have been committed to your separate existence. It's a repository for these to make a habit, to make a victim experience run like clockwork. The brain. The mind is actually free all the time. The mind has made choices to dream. So the Course in Miracles, it has a lower M mind, and then you'll see it capitalized mind. The lower M mind are the thoughts that actually sustain the ego. The ego is a thought system. The brain is a repository in this dream space, in this dream of materiality, for ego patterns and for ego-level functionality. You work your way. The ego is a thought system. The mind is the, quote, activating agent of spirit. Much, much more versatile than a brain. Much freer.
A brain is an organ. It's like a heart or a spine.
Yes. Yes. The brain is an organ. And that organ is serving to be a repository for thought patterns, memories.
One way I think of it is the brain is a substrate upon which the thoughts are embedded. Without it, you don't have a mind that functions in the way that we're used to thinking of minds.
Here, maybe this will be helpful. The brain, right, the organ,
yeah,
is a bridge between the body and your mind. Mind is a bridge between your brain, which we just used to get to mind. Is it your mind is a bridge between your brain and your spirit. Okay. Your spirit becomes, when you're ready to step on that bridge, now that you've worked your way out of brain and into mind and up to spirit awareness, your spirit is a bridge between your mind and your being. This all came to me in meditation one day. I thought, oh, I had to write that down.
I like that chain. Thank you. That's a useful tool for thinking of that whole thing. Does the mind entirely disappear as the dream ends?
The mind itself does not appear. The mind itself does not have a separate existence, the capital M mind. The mind is, at that point, is a power. So no, it never disappears in the absolute sense, because your God has extended functionality through mind. God has allowed spirit to have functionality through mind. Never disappears. It is function. It is function.
Thank you.
You bet. And finally, Miley. Miley, can you tell us what is happening when you indulge in deep judgments? Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, my phone gets overheated when I try and do all the functions, so I have the video off.
Okay.
There's this indignation and righteousness that happens. I mean, in this, I just had a process that you were so helpful with, my family situation, where it was clear that everything that had happened for my youngest daughter was just as it needed to be for her to have the healing that she needed to have. And then I watched myself as the weeks went by, and it was very sneaky how it came in, because I would see situations that where she was excluded with the little boys. I mean, so you got to add the little boys because that's a factor in this Easter process. You know, and it was like, yeah, that's so wrong. You know, yeah, it was all perfect, but this wasn't right. You know, so there's a right and wrong that started entering.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to see how to encompass this and not get too wordy, but.
What do you think your mind was trying to accomplish by finding out and actually figuring out exactly how wrong that was?
Well, it was trying to separate us all, because there was this beautiful unity,
mm-hmm,
in the realization that everything that had happened to this moment was perfect.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
There wasn't, there wasn't any judgment to be made either at self or at others.
Yes.
And then the mind just gets involved in, well, but so you got to do all these things to fix it, you know, and of course none of these fixing it's are going to fix it.
Mm-hmm. I just want to take something you said and highlight that when you get your judgment right, it's like stopping the music so you don't have to dance anymore. When you get the judgment right and figure out how wrong somebody is, you don't have to dance with them anymore. So says the ego. Separate us off. What an accomplishment. What an accomplishment.
Yeah, and then I saw my oldest daughter, who I was, you know, this judgment process was going on. I mean, and it's dancing all sides, you know. It's like, okay, then I've done something wrong. You know, I need to just ask her what, you know, what's going on. Yeah. I genuinely do want to know her feeling process. Mm-hmm. And feel like we haven't communicated, but this is a tricky one because it's like, where's the footing to communicate? Or do I just skip it all and go to stay in the higher frequency and move on?
All you have to do is be aware that your ego is seeking a way for you to be different. Seeking for the problem. Looking for the problem that's an unforgivable, something wrong that's unforgivable. Your ego's trying to find that. And then the love in you is bringing you back to reconsider. And we all live this life in bodies. And Andrew started it off when he really recognized that as negative as he would go, he would know there's a cry for love there too. You know, so you circle around back and forth. In fact, we came up one night on Thursday with a description for this. We got vacillation, one side to the other, love, hate. And we try to call in the Holy Spirit, even as the two sides are still pulling you, love and hate, to an oscillation. And eventually you can choose to give up the hate. But this is a way to describe how your mind will go between the dark and the light. It's normal for human existence. It's chaotic and it sucks. And I think we're here to solve the gravity, the desire, somehow to scratch the itch to judge and make somebody so wrong that they should not be understood. Yeah, let's bust that wide open. Go to page 442 in chapter 20. Chapter 20, section 8 is called the vision of, drum roll, sinlessness. And we're looking at paragraph 3. Now recognize, Course in Miracles uses this kind of vernacular in a couple of key words. It's not sinless. It's not innocent. It's not that this person didn't do it. It's not the discussion we're about to have. That's not where the work is done in A Course in Miracles, is decide whether or not they were guilty and did harm or should be punished. That's a lower level of thinking. There's lots of self-help books and psychology and marriage and family therapists and to work you through that. It's a long road. A Course in Miracles will work through all those issues as well. But it's a steeper road. It's a steeper path to correct your mind rather than trying to sort out all the issues out there. This term, sinlessness, is hinting, just like the other one uses, guiltlessness, is another term A Course in Miracles uses to try to establish the idea that the principle that you're looking at is bogus. He knows that for all the reasons we all just talked about, why we assign guilt and the identity and self-improvement, so I feel better, and all of that is the ways of the world. And it makes the world for you. And as Sundari was describing in her scenario, we got to open up that it's not that you're going to not be discerning about whose property is the curb on. and whether or not somebody else could take a jackhammer to your cement. That's not the judgment we're talking about. That's not the level we're working, because that solves, and it's so shallow. However, when it's something that is behind that, where you would say, no, that person's evil, they're actually a power of the devil working in the world. When you get into thoughts that resemble anything like that, you have to recognize you've built a place in the world that's stronger than God. It's stronger than good. And this is where we have to bust that. Remember, ultimately, this is a dream. You are the dreamer of the dream, and you are a character in your own dream. So if there's something evil here, I think we better bust that. So let's get right on it. Go to paragraph 3. It starts with your brother's sinlessness. And let's have Andrew Huang, would you start reading for us that paragraph?
Your brother's sinlessness is given you in shining light to look on with the Holy Spirit's vision and to rejoice in along with him. For peace will come to all who ask for it with real desire and sincerity of purpose, shared with the Holy Spirit and at one with him on what salvation is. Be willing, then, to see your brother sinless, that Christ may rise before your vision and give you joy, and place no value on your brother's body, which holds him to illusions of what he is. It is his desire to see his sinlessness as it is yours. And bless the Son of God in your relationship, nor see in him what you have made of him.
Do you see the circle yet again? He's asking you to recognize the power of your thoughts to make the world and to justify your brother's problems. Therefore, your own. Catch your thoughts. This is the key to salvation. And so I think we have just enough time. We'll end up going to salvation. Okay, sentence 1. Your brother's sinlessness is given you in shining light to look on with the Holy Spirit's vision. When you have a Holy Spirit vision, that's what a miracle is. It's a shift in perception. Vision's a great word for that. Where you can see your stinking brother who said what he said and did what he did, that problem, that one, to look at him again, but with the Holy Spirit. Now, this problem person is giving you to see through, to see beyond. And that's the Holy Spirit's job, is to translate the problems in your life and to show you the call for love that is the innocence, the sinlessness that is indeed there. And you must find it honestly. Otherwise, you keep a prison bar in your jail cell with each person you think cannot be forgiven. And that's how you make yourself in your personal private hell, prison. Okay? So, and it says also, two sides of the coin. So, your brother's sinlessness is giving you in shining light to look on with the Holy Spirit's vision and to rejoice in along with the Holy Spirit. And that's where the holy instant is recognized, is when you put down your judgment right in the middle of trouble and you see that this other person is also looking for happiness, even though it may be illegal, it may be uncaring, it may be horrible. But when you look at and see that they are actually driving toward happiness in the best way they know how, something in you lights up. A softness occurs in your heart. And the Buddhists call it compassion. It's the best they can do. There's no love, really, in Buddhism. It's not, you don't go there. But it's love. When you start to share and see through somebody else's eyes, even though you may be at difference with them, this is how you start to join. Okay? when you do that, there, like I say, there's an arresting that occurs in you, and that's a holy instant because you've done all three things. You've done the dogma of A Course in Miracles. You've had a miracle, shift in perception. You've forgiven your brother, at least for the moment. You've looked past, let go of your damning thoughts about them. That's forgiveness. And then you've had a holy instant. This is where you take that peaceful breath and say, ah, I think I would rather love. Somehow, I'd rather understand this person rather than fight them forever. Okay. For peace will come to all who ask for peace with, short word, big meaning, real desire, and sincerity of purpose. Is there more? Yeah. You would also come with a shared with the Holy Spirit and at one with the Holy Spirit on what salvation is. That sentence is jam-packed with your job. Your personal job. You do have a place in God's plan for salvation because of what you actually are. And that sentence is a rehearsal of how and when will you have peace in your life always. How does peace come and then stay? Well, let's read it again. Peace will come to all who ask for peace with real desire and sincerity of purpose, okay, shared with the Holy Spirit, yeah, and if as if that wasn't enough, but this last piece is the key, at one with the Holy Spirit on what salvation is. Turns out this is the chief burden of A Course in Miracles, is to help you understand what it means by salvation. Let's go take a look at what A Course in Miracles means by salvation. Hold your finger here. We're coming right back. Go to page 587, I think. Yeah. 587 in the text. We really should do a whole night on this, and we will one day. But not tonight. Right now, look at the bottom of your page on 587. And for some of you, this is probably highlighted. Look what it says, paragraph 10. And mind you, this is chapter 27, section 8, paragraph 10. It says this. It says, the secret of salvation is... Well, we're out of time. Let's close the meeting. See you all later. Bye. No, we're not quitting. Here it is, man. Black and white. One short little sentence. Oh, my God. Let's take it. Let's absorb this. Let's make this the lesson for our night, for our week, for our study, for our freedom. It's handed to us in a short sentence right here. The secret of salvation is but this, that, well, you are doing this unto yourself, period. I hope that's good news. You know, it's kind of good news and bad news, isn't it? I mean, the bad news is that you can't blame it on somebody else and go get them, or can't be fixed by somebody else, even God or Jesus or any other character you can come up with. You are not going to be saved. That's the bad news. But the good news is you don't need saving. You're the one that's holding this pressure on your own pressure point. Yes, your button's being pressed by you. This is truly the good news of A Course in Miracles. And it just shows you again and again and again how you're using your belief system to press your own buttons. So I hope that's good news. It's totally aware of that. The book is written with 1,300 pages to help you take your finger off of your own buttons. There's A Course in Miracles. That's what it is. And then the rest of the paragraph just says the same thing five times in a row. Just so you know, he means what he's saying. He says, no matter what the form of the attack, this is still true. And then he says it again. Whoever takes the role of enemy, of attacker, still, this is the truth. Then he says it again. Whatever your little mind in its body comes up with, whatever seems to be the cause of any pain and suffering you feel, still, is this the key to salvation? And it is your thoughts that make up your life. He's just trying to say it. For you would not react at all to figures in a dream that you knew that you were dreaming. Let them be as hateful and as vicious as they may, they could have no effect on you unless you fail to recognize that it is your dream. Your dream. We're talking about. That's the solution. That's the key to salvation. You're that close to freedom. You are one thought away from eternal freedom. You are. That's good news. I hope that's really good news. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for studying Course in Miracles with me. We're going to come right back to page 442 next week. This section is rich with this level of teaching. It's a very, very important teaching, this vision of sinlessness and vision and sinlessness. Thank you, everybody. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Donna. Thank you.
All next week.
Thank you, Jason.
Bye,
everybody.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Good night, everybody.